Welcome to More Than Medicine, where Jesus is more than enough for the ills that plague our culture and our country. Hosted by author and physician Dr. Robert Jackson and his wife Carlotta and daughter Hannah Miller. So listen up, because the doctor is in.
This is Dr. Robert Jackson. You're listening to More Than Medicine. I'm your host, and I'm bringing to you biblical insights and stories from the country doctor's rusty, dusty scrapbook. Well, I have a privilege today of hosting Dr. John Littell. He's a medical doctor from Florida. And John, I'm going to let you introduce yourself to my listening audience. Tell them a little bit about yourself and your background, a little bit about your family, and then we'll dive into our topic for tonight.
Well, I am so happy to be on your show, Dr. Robert Jackson. This is a real privilege and honor for me, and I'm also thankful that you have a Christ-centered show. My love affair with medicine is probably exceeded only by my love affair with our Lord and Savior. And I know my mother says when I was a kid, she had trouble dragging me out of church. I have this attraction for the cross and the suffering of Christ for us. That to me, it's, even as a child, I just would meditate on that. And I can say I even spent a year in seminary discerning a vocation after I went to Cornell University. I was very disenchanted back then with the pre-meds at Cornell. My mother drove a school bus. She was a single mom and four kids. My dad was around, but later on we reconciled to him, and that's another story for another day. But honor thy father and thy mother, and your days will be long, your life will be good. And I just learned that later, too late in life, frankly. And so we had a great upbringing, but I didn't know. I'd say I want to be a doctor, and I wanted to be a priest or a clergyman, and I didn't know how to do any of that stuff. So I was really privileged to be able to go to Cornell University back in the 70s. At that time, it wasn't quite as crazy as it is now, to say the least. And I got an amazing education, and then but then I didn't go to med school because I hadn't hung out with the pre-meds. You remember what that was like? And
yeah,
I just didn't think the ones up in New York were people I wanted to hang out with. And so when I graduated, they said, we're not writing you a letter. You never came to any of those meetings. So I did spend a year in seminary. I spent a year also teaching high school students in Long Island biology. And then I spent a year going to Columbia University in Manhattan to take graduate courses in DNA and protein chemistry and all kinds of good stuff. And then I was fortunate to get accepted to George Washington Medical School, but we didn't have the money to pay for that. It was the second most expensive school in the country at that time, $50,000 a year. Now it's
what were you thinking?
What was I thinking? Going to the only medical school I got into. And anyway, long story short, I joined the Army and to pay for my medical schooling. That's another beautiful story of my 7 years as an Army medical doctor. And met an amazing nurse, the best pediatric nurse in the Army, Kathleen McGonigal out of Montana. We've been married 34 years this year, and we've got, the Lord's blessed us with 5 beautiful children, and the oldest of which is a family physician who's working with me now. So,
how about that?
Yeah, I've lived a charmed life, yeah.
Man, oh man, oh man. So you work as a family physician where in Florida?
Right. I was originally, of course, Army. I spent a year with the National Health Service Corps in my wife's home state of Montana. A couple more years in Hillsdale, Michigan, the home of Hillsdale College there as a family doctor in my own practice. But ultimately, I got recruited to join what was then the largest, really, Christian group of family physicians in the country, Dr. Walt Larimore, who went on to work with a little bit with Focus on the Family in Colorado Springs. Some people may even know of him and his writings. And then his partner, Dr. John Hartman, actually recruited me because I had started an organization that never went very far, but it was called Family Physicians for Life, mm-hmm. which I think is a great, great title, isn't it? Huh? Family
it is.
Physicians.
That's exactly right.
Let me be your family physician for life.
Uh-huh.
And anyway, so I started that when I was on my own in Montana that year. And I got to meet a lot of great pro-life Christian people from various parts of the country, and I was thankful. In 97, they recruited me to Kissimmee, Florida, because they were starting, at that time, they were becoming fully pro-life in their practice, and they wanted me to help kind of make that change with them. And I joined their group, and then ultimately most of us went out on our own within a few more years. And I've been on my own since 2003. And other than my daughter and a couple of other mid-level providers, as they're called, I've had a great run and an independent solo practice of family medicine. And I'm thankful, especially now with all the craziness that's been going on the last few years, that I'm independent. I'm not attached or owned by any hospital or corporate entity.
How about that? That's amazing. That's amazing. Well, now tell my listeners a little bit about your interest or lack of interest or whatever it is that you would like to say about vaccines, because my listening audience has a great deal of interest in vaccines, especially with the COVID so-called vaccine. And we've talked about that a lot on my podcast in the last 2 years. So, and you don't necessarily have to talk about the COVID genetic therapeutic agent, but I know that you have interest in other vaccines, their benefits or lack thereof, their detriment, and so forth. So you take it away, Dr. John, and tell us what your opinions are.
Well, you know, I think what has happened here, and you've done such a great job, I know, on your show, and many others have pointed out, that we're at a point in our medical profession where probably close to the majority of patients are not accepting these vaccines that doctors have been throwing at them year after year, month after month, and with regards especially to children, without asking questions. And that's really one of the best things that happened during COVID, is people started, their eyes opened up, and they said, why are we just accepting these blanket recommendations or guidelines from the CDC and the FDA? So here's how this starts with me, is that, you know, I was one of those doctors, like I'm sure you were, where we were trained to just give these shots to kids and all that, and give everybody a flu shot every year and a tetanus shot every 10 years and pneumonia shots. You know, they used to have one pneumonia shot, then they had another pneumonia shot, you know, 13 conjugate, 23 conjugate. This one, the shingles vaccine, they had a Shingrix, and then they came up with, they had the Zostavax,
yeah, then Shingrix,
which was a disaster of a vaccine that Merck created, but they convinced all of us that everybody had to get it. And then after 10 years of making billions on Zostavax, they turn around and say, well, it wasn't very effective after all. So now Glaxo comes out with Shingrix, which is two shots. So it seems like they're always finding ways to come up with something new, just like they do with so many other medications. And when I give a talk to couples preparing for marriage on, it's a really nice talk. It's called Reclaiming the Good and Beautiful in Your Life, and trying to help them understand how to live according to God's plan when it comes to, you know, everything from family planning to just, you know, appreciating the woman that you're marrying. That's a woman, you know, gender issues and men being men, and raising children in the way that they're meant to be raised according to their genetic makeup, as it were. But I start out my lecture saying that modern medicine has become all about medicating and operating and vaccinating, but rarely, if ever, is medicine about educating. And we just don't do enough to bring the patient, you know, up to speed on what's really out there, or for that matter, having the doctor and the physician work in a the physician and the patient work in a collaborative manner, because patients know a lot too. You know, they more than ever, they know, as we saw with COVID, they knew more than most of the doctors knew.
You're right about that. Because I talk a lot about COVID illiterate MDs, because my patients often come to me and say to me that they knew more about COVID than their doctor did. And I say, well, you know, because doctors often are COVID illiterate today.
COVID illiterate. We become so robotic in our behavior. And this is all, you know, part of the plan when insurance companies were allowed to dictate how we provide care to patients instead of just paying for the health care.
Yep.
You know, insurance companies coming up and the federal government coming up with quality measures and saying if a patient doesn't get a flu shot every single year, you're no longer providing quality care. Or if a child isn't up to date on the vaccine schedule, you're not a good doctor. We're not going to pay you if you're not doing what we're telling you to do. So the idea how healthcare has gotten to be so controlled by these other agencies, like the government, the insurance companies, the hospitals, is I'm sure you've covered. So I was one of those doctors who gave most of those vaccines unquestioningly, almost across the board until the HPV vaccine came out, Gardasil. And thankfully, I was at a time in my career in the military, and just about the time I was getting out of the military in, in the mid-90s. And I had been doing women's health care, a lot of it, in fact, teaching residents and even OBGYN residents about women's health care and delivering babies. And I did, something called colposcopy, which is examination of the woman's cervix with a microscope to see if there's precancerous changes. And it was during my training in colposcopy, going to places like Michigan and in Orlando and others, I learned how the classification of pap smears was all just all over the place back in the late 80s, and early 90s. People were being told they had precancerous changes and they didn't. They had normal. They were normal, and women were getting unnecessary procedures. The American medical profession, specifically the pathologists who look at these slides, were all in a muddle over what to do. And then all of a sudden, they came up with the ability to identify the human papillomavirus, HPV, as the cause of cervical cancer in women. And so then it became easier for us to say to women, hey, you know what? Guess what? HPV is a sexually transmitted disease, all right? And as we learned back in medical school back in the 80s, you know, nuns, Roman Catholic nuns, were at higher risk of breast cancer because they hadn't had the ability to, or, you know, they hadn't had babies, they hadn't breastfed those babies. And so that increases the unopposed estrogen on the breast tissue, but a lower risk of zero risk of cervical cancer because they're not sexually active. So cervical cancer, as I learned back in the early 90s, is in fact a sexually transmitted disease. And that's kind of a newsflash, right? All these women getting their paps every year for no good reason because it's a robotic behavior on the part of the GYN. And then when the HPV was identified, well, Merck, which is a huge pharmaceutical company, came out with their first vaccine called Gardasil. Actually, there was another one called Cervarix by another company. They didn't really hit the market much. And then they were able to somehow work with the CDC and the FDA and convince every doctor in America to convey the message to women of America, mothers and fathers, that their daughters would get HPV in their lifetime, and that in order to protect them from HPV, you had to give them this vaccine as young as 10 or 11 years of age. And initially it was the girls, and then they threw the boys in just because of aberrant sexual behaviors. That boys, you know, obviously they're not going to get cervical cancer, but HPV is attracted to places in the throat. It's also attracted to places in the anal rectal area and then the cervix. Those are the three areas that this human papillomavirus takes root as a result of sexual activity. And I won't need to get into any more details on that probably. So we're basically vaccinating the boys because of they might get into, you know, doing these sexual acts, and the girls. And yet we're not at any point in time. I went to meetings where they even specifically said, do not call this a vaccine against a sexually transmitted disease. All right. And that's just wrong, you know, to not call it what it is. And this is because, you know, the modern society and the morals of today, which are basically non-existent, everyone's going to be promiscuous. And not only that, but we should allow everybody to try promiscuity as a lifestyle. So those of us, as I listened to these, saw these things rolling out, I knew that there were lies out there. I wrote a book called The Hidden Truth, Deception of Women's Healthcare. And the first third of that is about the entire campaign, you know, to roll out these vaccines and also the truth about how women get HPV, how they can prevent it, and how you can get rid of it when you get it. In other words, there's no need for the doggone vaccine. Mm-hmm. And that one has been rolled out to millions of unsuspecting women with consequences, and boys. There have been many cases of irreversible neurological damage, including Guillain-Barré, which causes people to even stop breathing and dying. And there's been irreversible infertility in young women who stopped having their periods. Something called POTS, which is a cardiovascular condition that you see with these vaccines, where they get tachycardia and and passing out. So I've been on a campaign for over 20 years to get the truth out about HPV. And just as I was going to, this book was published, The Hidden Truth, COVID came on the scene. And here I am calling out the FDA and the CDC for all the hypocrisy.
And you're a lone voice crying in the wilderness.
Yes, sir. I think that's what so many of us are crying in the wilderness of a morass of confusion in the medical profession. And it's hard, you know, Robert, you know, the hardest thing is to get us doctors to realize that we've been wrong. You know, I mean, I'll be talking about that in Sarasota next week, which is another whole conversation. But when you, as a physician, when a physician has done wrong to somebody, and God knows I did some wrong things early in my training, there's so many reasons why they're reluctant to ever admit that they did wrong to their patients.
It's hard. It's hard to admit that you were one of those doctors who bought hook, line, and sinker, the CDC pediatric immunization recommendations for 30 years without question. And then to find out that that recommendation is not based on science whatsoever.
Exactly. I mean, when, this is what happened when COVID came out and I started doing my first videos. I did one on pediatric vaccinations, and I started doing my research. I went back to my own, you know, from the 80s when I was in residency and 90s in practice. And I looked about when they rolled out these vaccines, for example, you know, hepatitis B, which became a universal vaccination in newborns. Right after they're born, they're getting a shot against a disease which is exclusively transmitted by sex or blood.
That's right.
You know, IV drug abuse or drug use or sexual contact. And so we had this universal campaign, and the only reason for hepatitis B vaccination was because you'd have a small sampling of mothers who were IV drug users or prostitutes or whatever that had active hepatitis, and would give birth to the baby who would then have hepatitis, right? So they're treating every one of our babies as though every one of their mamas
is a drug abuser or a prostitute
with hepatitis B.
That's right.
There you go. And that has been the norm in terms of how we give vaccines to kids. We treat, according to the lowest common denominator of society, every mother. Same thing with the pneumococcal vaccine in kids, which was initially meant to be for high-risk inner-city, non-breastfeeding, daycare-going, you know, babies. And you have a, you know, we just don't need to worry about ear infections as much. And why are we giving these vaccines against ear infections to begin with? So there's a whole boatload of these vaccines that kids are getting polio. You could make a really big argument. There's been so many missteps with the polio vaccine campaign since it rolled out that it would take another whole show to talk about that. You know, and then, of course, now we see our FDA saying COVID shots for babies over 6 months. Give me a break.
Oh, goodness gracious. You're breaking my heart when I hear people talk about giving infants COVID vaccines. That's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard of.
Yes. Yeah. Well, we're the pediatric profession. I'm very fond of this statement. And God bless them. Pediatricians, this is another thing, by the way, you know, you and I both agree, these are not malicious, evil people, right?
I mean, they're well-intentioned. They're just uninformed.
They're uninformed.
Like I said, some doctors are COVID illiterate. So many of our fellow physicians are vaccine illiterate. They don't know about vaccines. They don't know that they're not, there were never any proper controls in any of the studies for vaccines.
And yet they get deluged with these supposed peer review articles demonstrating how we've kept pertussis rates at an all-time low because every child's vaccinated against pertussis, which, by the way, is a completely treatable disease with the Zithromax or zithromycin, which is out there. You know, it's not like we can't treat an isolated case of any of these diseases. But no, if you have a refrigerator full of vaccines and you're a pediatrician, and you don't give those vaccines out, you eat the cost of those vaccines, you're talking about tens of thousands of dollars of lost revenue, and not to mention the revenue you gain by giving those shots. And so they become into shock clinics. That's what they are turned into, the pediatric offices. And I am, as a result, swamped with parents who bring their kids to me from all over because they just want to find a pediatrician, which I do a lot of peds, of course, as a family doc, who won't force feed them all these vaccines. And,
That's right.
You know, they have never met a vaccine they didn't love in the pediatric profession. That's what I say. They just, they can't even critical thinking about any of it. So we've got a problem in our society with doctors being, you know, like you say, illiterate when it comes to these issues.
That's right. You're listening to Dr. John Littell from down in Florida, who's my guest today on More Than Medicine. Well, now, let me ask you a question. Did your practice explode during COVID with patients wanting a doctor who would not push the COVID vaccine on them?
Well, it did after the main here. My practice has exploded. You know, I'm in my mid-60s. It's the busiest I've ever been because of, first of all, with COVID, when people got the word that I was one of the few doctors that was treating people, right, with the Alpha and the Delta variants, with hydroxychloroquine and then ivermectin.
Yeah.
In conjunction with a lot of other medications, as you know, the whole cocktail that Dr. McCullough and others have written about. But so we were going, I mean, I say that, you know, as an active duty military physician 30 years ago, deployments, this was harder than anything I'd ever done as a doctor, just morning, noon, and night, and calls at 2, 3 in the morning from people frantic because they're husband had a temperature, right? You know,
and
so that was right. Once they knew it, right, they called you all over the. And so I was not going to say no to any of that stuff. But then, of course, now thank goodness the Delta slowed down. We had a little bit of a lull after Delta, and then now we're dealing with the fact that people can't find doctors who won't push the vaccines on them and their kids.
Yeah.
It's not so much for the treatment now as it is for the fact that hey, I want a doctor who's not going to kill me or give me something that's potentially harming me. And it's very hard to find doctors who will give patients a choice in the matter, especially when it comes to their kids.
Man, I had literally hundreds of patients change from their physician because they were angry that their physician was forcing them or browbeating them into taking the COVID vaccine. And they would bring to them solid evidence that the vaccine was causing adverse events, and the doctors would laugh them off and then try to browbeat them into taking the vaccine. And they left their doctors that they'd seen for 20 or 30 years and would come to see me because they said, "Doctor, I'm just so thankful that you're not compelling me to take this COVID vaccine."
Well, this is before COVID, my friend. I mean, I was at meetings at Nemours Children's Hospital here in Orlando. Oh, 10, 15 years ago, maybe. It would have been that long. And they were talking about how mothers who refuse vaccines for their kids should be reported to social services, that it's a form of child neglect. And, you know, they wouldn't, when I would bring up the abortion connection with several other vaccines, which there is, we do know that it would do experimentation with aborted fetuses and that fetal DNA is somehow wrapped up in several of these vaccines. You know, they talk about, you know, they aborted apparently healthy, 12-week and sometimes even further along baby in Japan or wherever it was. How do you say it's apparently healthy? And by the way, I mean, who cares if it's apparently healthy or not? We're still experimenting with that fetal DNA to produce these vaccines. So in tissue cultures. So even from a pro-life perspective, I bring it up and then they always come back and they say, oh, well, you know, the Catholic Church has already said that it's not immediate cooperation with evil, but that the from the morality perspective, and I've studied that in seminary and in detail since then, it's not a matter of remote or immediate cooperation with evil. It's a matter of alternatives. You don't need to touch this stuff.
This
we don't need to even mess with these vaccines. Just look at the reality of children who are healthy, who are completely unvaccinated against these obscure illnesses, frankly, and children who have been vaccinated with, you know, 50 different types of injections over in combinations over the first 4 years of their lives. And, we have our work cut out for us.
We certainly do. Well, Dr. John Littell, we're running out of time. Do you have any final comments you'd like to make before we conclude our conversation?
Well, you know, I am looking at a wonderful verse that you probably can tell me where it's from, but even now says the Lord, return to me with your whole heart, for I am gracious and merciful. And Those are two things we need to be cognizant of in medicine and in the world. God's infinite grace, right? That the only way we're going to ever get around this quagmire, get out of this quagmire, is through his grace and an abundant amount of his mercy.
Yes,
because,
yes.
You know, how else can we deal with our colleagues in medicine if we're not merciful to them for the wrong that they have done? You know, we expect Jesus to be merciful to us for the wrongs we've done. So, you know, we have to forgive them, and we have to hope that they will move on and realize the sanctity of life and the sanctity of the patient-physician relationship.
Exactly right. And also recognize the patient's autonomy. You know, patients have a right to refuse medication, refuse a vaccination, refuse a surgery. And modern medicine has to recognize patients' autonomy to do such a thing and to be honorable and respectful to our patients. So, well, listen, you're listening to More Than Medicine. My guest today is Dr. John Littell, family physician from down in Florida. John, I really appreciate you being on the program with me, and I hope maybe we could do this again sometime. Would that be okay?
I am always open to being with you. You're my brother in Christ now, and we're going to be making this last a long time, Lord willing. Thank you.
Well, I hope so, and I'd love to have you back again. I think there are a lot of other subjects that we could discuss at a future date.
Thank you for listening to this edition of More Than Medicine. For more information about the Jackson Family Ministry, Dr. Jackson's books, or to schedule a speaking engagement, go to their Facebook page, Instagram, or their webpage at jacksonfamilyministry.com. This podcast is produced by Bob Sloan Audio Production at bobsloan.com.